start out with our meditation. So I'll just explain the meditation that we're going to do first, but we start out every week with our meditation. And we do just about 10, 15 minutes. It's nothing too difficult, pretty easy, laid back. It's all about relaxation. It's all about letting go of stress, tension, anxiety. Then after our meditation, I'll give a bit of a talk on whatever our theme is for the week. And this week, the theme is about dealing with difficult people, difficult situations that we might encounter, and, you know, perhaps what we can do in those situations, what Buddhists would do, what Buddhists would say we should do, even if they don't do it themselves. And then we open up for discussion, question, answer. Anybody else can share what's helped them in their life, how their meditation practice is going. In terms of masks, just to let you know, we're supposed to keep them on for the duration of the session, but you can take them off for the meditations. That's, of course, unless you're exempt or you're drinking water or anything, in which case you don't have to wear them. So I'd like to continue this evening. So this is our fourth session here, and what we've been doing over the last 4 weeks is meditation for beginners. We've been looking at different meditation techniques and learning what is meditation, how we meditate, how we reduce distractions, how we stop ourselves from falling asleep when we meditate, all these kinds of things. And the last couple of weeks we've been exploring mindfulness of breathing. So it's a meditation that probably everyone here is familiar with. We've all heard of it, even if we haven't practiced it. And many people think it is just a beginner's practice, but it's not. It is one of the methods of meditation that the Buddha most widely taught, because it's very good for those of us who get very distracted, those of us who have a lot going on in the head, and we just sort of need to release some of that, calm the mind. And through mindfulness of breathing, we learn to get a calm mind. We learn to focus our mind on one thing so that we can let go of some of that stress, let go of some of that tension. And so the last couple of weeks, what we've been doing is exploring mindfulness of breathing in different methods, because there's different ways of doing it. So the first one we tried was mindfulness of breathing of the whole body. So that's where we just attend to the entire space of the body, even the legs and the arms, and notice any sensations of breathing that we can find. And this method is very good for relaxation. Then last week we did a method where you just focus on the belly. You notice the belly rising and falling, and that's very good for cultivating a stability of our attention, how long we can maintain our attention. And this week the mode that we're going to try is mindfulness of breathing at the nostrils. And this technique is very commonly taught in the Theravada Buddhist traditions. Most people, this seems to be the approach that they learn first. But having done this method for a while, having learned about it, heard from other people, heard from my teachers about it, there's one main obstacle that people get when they do mindfulness of breathing at the nostrils. And that is they start to contract a little bit around the eyes. They almost start to like go cross-eyed, kind of looking down the nose, and things start to get a bit tight. Things start to get a bit constricted. People start to get headaches. And I've known people to say, every time I meditate, I just get a headache. And they keep trying anyway, for some reason, keep pushing. And then eventually, you know, like the headaches are getting chronic, you're starting to feel tension in the body, and it's just not fun anymore. And you think, why am I doing this? So my one piece of advice for when we do this technique is to keep your eyes completely out of it. Don't be trying to visualize the nose. Don't be trying to bring your eyes down to the nose. You're literally just going to be attending to the sensations of air as they flow at the apertures of the nostrils or at the upper lip, wherever you feel it most. And as best you can, just keep your eyes completely uninvolved. And the other two things we're going to introduce in this meditation, we did them last week, but I'll mention them again now, is this, first of all, it's a gentle sort of oscillation. So every time we breathe in, we're going to focus in more. We're going to really pay very close attention as we breathe in. And then every time we breathe out, we're going to relax. We're going to release more, almost like sort of just sighing on the out-breath. So we focus in more as we breathe in, and we relax and we release as we breathe out. Because this meditation, mindfulness of breathing, and all shamatha meditations, all meditations which are about concentration, about calming the mind, they need to start from a place of relaxation. There's no point going into meditation thinking, I will focus, I will get this, you know, like all guns blazing, really tight mind, I will concentrate. You know, like the way that we might kind of approach our working life and other things in life. We have to come into meditation with a sense of relaxation, and that relaxation needs to deepen and deepen. And I think we could all do with some of that, couldn't we? We all hold too much tension. So meditation is not about achieving something, but it's about relaxing. It's about unwinding. And that's how we get good at, that's how our meditation goes well. The agitation, the distraction, the, you know, constantly following after the next thought and the next thought, that all comes from not being relaxed enough. That comes from being tightly wound, from the way that we sort of normally are in our day-to-day life. So relaxing more is the antidote to that. So in the meditation, if you do become distracted, don't sort of like criticize yourself and be, oh, I got distracted again, and kind of like bring yourself back and be quite harsh with yourself, because that will create more agitation, that will create more distraction. You kind of like spur it on, and then it gets worse, and then you get more agitated, and then you just get frustrated, and then what's the point of meditation? So every time you get distracted, remind yourself this is an opportunity to relax a bit more, release that distraction on the out-breath, and bring yourself back. So that's enough words. Let's go into our meditation. If you're seated on the chair, Yasmin, you know very well to sit with your feet flat on the floor. If we're on a cushion, ideally we want the cushion under our bum and not really our legs on the cushion, so that our legs can... Ooh, it's difficult with shoes on. So that our legs can be relatively towards the floor. If you can see, my knees are kind of touching the floor. This way, my back is naturally curved and it's naturally straight. If you are leaning in such a way that you can feel all your tension on your lower back, you need to be able to edge yourself in this way. I know some people might have just brought mats and not cushions, so you might not be able to raise your bum very much. But when you're at home meditating, do grab some cushions. Even if you have to grab like 2, 3, 4 to give you that height so that your knees do go down, so that your back is naturally straight. Otherwise, you spend most of your meditation trying to keep a straight back and then just going, because you can't hold it. So find a comfortable position. As I said, the main thing is that our back is straight. With your hands, you have a couple of options. You can either just leave them on your knees, you can leave them wherever they seem to fall, or the classic mudra is right hand on top of left, thumbs gently touching, and you place them right about here. Your arms shouldn't be right next to you, but there should be some distance. Your head gently facing downwards, chin tucked in, and when you're ready, you can gently close your eyes. I should say, of course, if you wish, you can be lying down for this meditation, and if you are lying down, then you want to be completely flat on your back. And just take a moment to get comfortable here. It's important for this particular meditation that we can be still, if possible, for the entire duration. So make sure the posture you're in is quite comfortable. And we begin our meditation by allowing our awareness to descend into the body. First of all, right down to the ground, where our body is in contact with the cushion, the chair, or the floor. And then, like a fragrance filling a room, let your awareness fill the entire space of the body, from the soles of the feet to the top of the head. And as you maintain a mindful presence of the body, if you notice any areas that feel tight or tense, invite yourself to release that tension And especially on the out-breath, let yourself relax. And bring your attention to the face. Allow the forehead to feel spacious and open, no contraction whatsoever. Likewise between the eyebrows. Relax the muscles of the eyes, the mouth and the jaw. Allow the shoulders to drop. If you are lying down, release all control of all of your muscles. Just let everything become very relaxed. And let every out-breath be an opportunity to relax more and more from your core in the body. And also with the out-breath, release any thoughts. As if the out-breath were a gentle breeze blowing away dry leaves. Gently release thoughts, allow them to dissolve back into the space of the mind. And see if at the very end of the out-breath, your mind can be as conceptually still as possible. And now focus your attention at the point of the apertures of the nostrils, or just above the upper lip. Try to get a sense for the sensations of the flow of air at this location, wherever you feel it most. And don't try to control the breathing in any way. Just become aware of the sensations of the airflow. And once you've found them, your job for the remainder of the meditation is to focus there single-pointedly. And then we introduce this gentle oscillation of every time we breathe in, focus in more. Pay very close attention to that in-breath. And then on the out-breath, allow yourself to relax and release any tension, any thoughts. Remember, if you do become distracted, if you find your mind has begun to wander, let your immediate reaction be to relax. Release whatever sound, thought, memory, emotion, whatever the event is, allow it to release and gently guide your awareness back to the breath. And then we can experiment with counting. So at the very end of the in-breath, very quickly, very succinctly, like a punctuation mark, one. Then allow the breath to flow out, relax, release. Let the next breath flow in, and at the very end of that in-breath, two. And see if you can maintain your awareness of the breath for 7 counts of the breath. And when you're ready, gently relax your concentration, bring your meditation to an end. If you're on the floor, just gently bring yourself back. Start with the hands, start with the feet. No sudden movements. There's something going on out there, isn't there? There was, I was reading a book yesterday, and it's a book that I've been drawing from a lot lately. It's Ajahn Brahm's book. I don't know if anybody knows him. He's a Theravadan monk from Australia, and he's known for his humorous and foul-mouthed kind of stories and good examples. And there's this book that he has called Don't Worry, Be Grumpy, and it's full of quite good stories. And so I came across it yesterday, and I wanted to share it because I think it's something we can all relate to. And it's called Monkey Minds. And in Buddhism, there's often this teaching that we all have a monkey mind. And this is because, you know, our mind is like jumping from one branch to another, always sort of like this thing, then that thing. And, you know, it's kind of just a bit like out of control. And so this is the story. So a monkey was visiting a Buddhist monastery on one of their very special days. He thought that there would be many visitors bringing offerings of food, so that someone was going to drop a mango, bananas, apples, you know, and somebody would leave something unattended, and that could be his lunch. As he was loitering outside the monastery's big hall, he happened to hear an old monk inside giving a talk about the monkey mind. And thinking that that might be of interest to a monkey, the monkey listened. The monkey mind, said the old monk, is a restless mind, always jumping from one thing to another, like a monkey jumping from one branch to another in the jungle. It is a bad mind that needs to be rectified through the practice of meditation in order to find peace. And when the monkey heard about the monkey mind and it being called a bad mind, he became very angry. So what do they mean monkey mind is bad? I'm a monkey and monkey minds are just fine. These humans are slandering us. This is unfair. This is not right. I have to do something about this gross defamation. It's a very intelligent monkey. And the monkey swung through the trees back to his home deep in the forest to complain to his friends. And soon the large troop of monkeys was jumping up and down, squealing, they can't get away with slandering us. This is species discrimination. How dare they? We need to do something. We monkeys have rights too. And stop it, ordered the leader of the troop. Don't you see? The monk was right. Look at you, jumping up and down, making so much noise. This is the result of having a monkey mind. You monkeys just can't be still. The monkeys realized their leader kind of had a point. They were all cursed with a monkey mind and would never find any peace. So they all hung their heads in shame and brooded in a sullen silence. Hey, said the monkey who'd been to the temple, I've got an idea. I heard the monk said teach that if you meditate, then you can overcome the monkey mind and you can find peace, you can find happiness. So the happy monkeys started jumping up and down, squealing, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. Let's meditate. Let's find some peace of mind. And after so much jumping about, one monkey said, so how do we do that? How do we meditate? And so they said, first, we need to find a cushion to sit on. So, yeah, okay, cool. Let's go find cushions. So they all jumped about and found leaves and whatever and turned them into meditation cushions. What do we do next? Now, we sit on the cushion. Cross your legs, place your right on top of the left, back straight, close your eyes, and observe your breathing. This was the first time in history that monkeys had ever meditated. The forest had never been so quiet. Unfortunately, it didn't last long. Excuse me, interrupted one monkey, and all the others opened their eyes. I've been thinking, don't you all remember that we'd planned to raid the banana plantation for our lunch today? I can't stop thinking about it, so why don't we just go raid the banana plantation now, get that out of the way, and then we can meditate. Yeah, cool, great idea. I've been thinking about that too. So they started jumping up and down and off they went to raid the plantation. They stole many bananas, put them in a pile, and got back. And having got it out of the way, they got back to their meditation cushion, sat down, crossed their legs, paused in the right mudra, straightened their backs, closed their eyes, and started to meditate. And after a few more minutes, another monkey put up their hand. Excuse me, I've been thinking too. Before we eat those bananas, we have to peel them. Let's get that out of the way first, and then I can meditate without thinking about it. And the others were like, yeah, cool, we've been thinking the same. So once again, they were jumping up and down, they started to peel the bananas. Having peeled them all, put them back in the pile, the monkeys went back to their cushions. Once again, sat down and started to meditate. Wasn't long before, excuse me, I've been thinking also, before we eat those bananas, we actually have to place them in our mouths. Let's get that out of the way first, and then I can meditate without thinking about it. So, yeah, cool, sounds good. They all jumped up and down, made a lot of noise, and they put bananas in their mouths. Some put one, a few put two, and one put three, because monkeys are no different than people. But they didn't eat them yet. It was just, you know, to get something out of the way so that they didn't have to think about it and they would be free to meditate instead. So they sat down on their cushions again, crossed their legs, got into the right mudra, and started to meditate. Of course, once all the eyes were closed, they just started eating the bananas. They got up and then they left. And that was their end of the one and only meditation session. And so he ends here by saying, now you know why we humans have difficulty finding peace of mind. Most of us have monkey minds, which say, I will just get this one thing out of the way first, and then I'll rest, then I'll relax. And that is why, he says here, the only place these days you'll find people resting in peace is in the cemetery and the Buddhist monastery, of course. So when I read that, I thought that that was something I wanted to share, because I think we all think that we're unique sometimes in our, you know, when we try to meditate and we think, oh, I can't do this, it doesn't work, I always get distracted, or I can never find the time, there's always something else to do. And we all think that that's just us, and we go to a class like this and everybody else is meditating really well and everybody else must have peace of mind and it's just me. But we all start out in the same place, and probably many of us in the room have, you know, this same experience. And if we don't have a daily meditation practice yet, it's probably because there's always something sort of that just needs to be gotten out of the way first. Or we sit down to, and then there's loud noise outside, and then we think, I can't possibly do it now, I'll have to do it another time. And typically it's quiet out there now that we've stopped. Is that what happens? You know, that's the way that life works. And then when we'd sit down now that it was quiet, something else would come up. You know, oh, well, now I've only got 10 minutes before they come home, so I better start making dinner, or I need to sort this out. There's always going to be something, and we all start there. So, a question came up at yesterday's meditation class, and I thought it would be something good to focus on, and it was in our discussion, and people were talking about sort of challenging situations that they come up with. And after describing, you know, some really difficult circumstances that gets them really stressed, really frustrated, the question came, how do we deal with frustrating situations? How do we deal with frustrating people? When we're all riled up, we're annoyed with someone or something, what do we do? How do we maintain peace of mind when that happens? What would the peaceful Buddhist say? So one of the examples that came up was about traffic. It was someone who always kind of has road rage and always, you know, when driving in the 50 zone, they always seem to be behind somebody going 20, and it kind of like gets them really riled up, and they might have the kid in the back who's screaming and they need to be somewhere and they just get really annoyed and they're trying to like go around the person, and the more they try and go around, the more it gets stressful, the more it gets frustrating. And so with this situation or any situations that we get like stressed and frustrated at, I think it's important, first of all, that we try and investigate it a little bit. So let's do that. First of all, where does the frustration, the red face, the sweatiness, the fast-paced heart, the racing thoughts, all of those things when you're frustrated in that way, where does that come from? How does it arise? And normally, you know, we ordinarily think it comes from the other person. It comes from the person who's driving at 20 when they should be driving 50. It comes from, you know, this person who's driving me nuts. It comes from the things going wrong. And so we believe that there's certain people, there's certain situations in life that it just gives rise to anger. It just makes me stressed. You know, this person, they just make me angry, or this situation, it just gets me stressed. There's nothing I can do. That's just what happens. But as some of us will remember a couple of weeks ago when we were exploring the origin of suffering and happiness in the mind, as we start to come to understand through meditation, getting familiar with the mind, how the mind works, external things and external people are not enough to give rise to suffering, to tension, just the same as sort of joy as well. It's about what happens in the mind. And so, you know, with traffic, for example, not everyone gets angry. So if traffic was an automatic cause of anger, then absolutely everybody who got in it would experience the same sort of level of anger, but some people just don't care. It doesn't bother them at all. If our manager was a source of stress, then whenever they entered the room, everybody would just be like, would just get stressed. That would just be like an automatic reaction that everybody had. And maybe you think, well, yeah, everybody in my office does get stressed when they come in the room. But they have a family, they have friends, they have people who actually like them, they have people who don't get stressed by them. So a situation external to us, whether it's a situation or a person, it doesn't automatically mean stress or anger or negative feeling. It's about what goes on in the mind. So that's the first point. Okay, where does the anger come from? It's what goes on in the mind. And the real enemy is not the other person, but it's that mental affliction of anger. And it's anger that's the problem, you know, our way of responding. So how did we respond? What did we do that ended up with red face, screaming, shouting, trying to get around this person, and, you know, just like the adrenaline running and everything else? Well, we ended up in traffic. We ended up behind the slow driver. And what we did when that happened was we rejected it. A kind of like an internal and an external no. A kind of, I don't want this. I don't want to be here. I don't want to be in this traffic. I don't want to be in this situation. And what's happening is we're clinging on to what we want to happen. We really want to not be in traffic right now. We really want to be at our destination. We don't want our kid to be screaming in the back. We don't want to be behind this slow driver. We want all of that to go away. And so what's happening is we're focusing on that. We're focusing on what we think should be happening and what we want to be happening, and completely rejecting what is actually happening in front of us. What is in reality, what is actually happening. And that part of us that believes that it should be other than what it is, that it should be different. You know, when you're in traffic, there is a part of you that really believes, I shouldn't be here right now. I should be at, you know, my destination. And that belief that this shouldn't be happening is the reason that tension comes, the reason, you know, that thought of dislike happens. So there's a situation I don't want. I think I shouldn't be experiencing it. I don't like that. And from don't like comes this focusing on why we don't like it, why it's a bad thing. I'm going to be late because of this, and then that's just going to happen. I'm going to get fired. I'm going to end up homeless, blah, blah, blah. You know, just like whatever it is, the sort of like train of nonsense and this story and drama that comes out. We get focused, we get stuck in that. And because of all that, anger comes out. And then we're angry at the person in front of us who's actually just having a very nice time listening to something, and they have no awareness that they are going slow. They're just having a good time, but we're angry at them. We're angry at whoever it is that made us late. You know, something happened at home that made us late. We're angry at that. We're angry at the fact that we have to experience this. So it comes out however it needs to. And all that started from a very simple, no, I don't want to be experiencing this. So by holding on to that what we want, rejecting what is, we bring about that tension, this strong don't want. So the first thing we need to do, again and again and again and again, when we do get into situations that are difficult, when tension does start to arise, when we're faced with difficulty, is to let go of the no, the part of us that really just wants it to be other than what it is, that wish for it to be different. And it's not a like it, it's not an accept it and like it, or, you know, welcome it even, but it's an acknowledgement, okay, I am in traffic, I am behind a slow driver, I accept. That's all it is. I wholeheartedly accept this is what's arising for me in my life right now. And that's half the battle. Half the battle is the fact that we're rejecting it and want it to change. Then, once we've gotten over the first hurdle, it comes to, okay, what can I do now? What can I practically do? Do I need to phone ahead? Do I need to take a different route? What do I need to do from here? So what else can we do to remain calm when things are difficult? And I think we have different approaches. We can attack the real problem of anger, the mind of anger, which is the Buddhist approach, to focus on that anger itself, become aware of the faults of anger, how it's actually ruining our own day, and work to abandon that anger. So that's one approach. Another approach is to change our perspective about the situation, about, you know, the situation that we're in, try and break that story that we've created. And another one is about soothing, self-soothing, engaging the parasympathetic nervous system, which, you know, is through breathing. So let's just look at those. The perspective one, in that situation in traffic, we've gotten ourselves wrapped up in our own story. So we can try and break that story. You know, what is actually the worst that can happen? What's the absolute worst that can happen that I'm in traffic right now? Is it death? You know, we can think, what is the absolute worst that's really going to happen here? Try and detach ourselves from the story. Try and see from another perspective. Is it really going to be the end of the world if I'm 10 minutes late? Are people going to understand that I got in traffic? Because, you know, when we are stuck in traffic, we get ourselves so riled up. We think, I can't be late for this thing. You turn up and you say, sorry, I got caught in traffic. And people go, no problem. Well, they didn't even notice because they were so wrapped up in their own thing. They didn't even notice that you were 10 minutes late. So we always think it's going to be so much worse because of that story that we've created. But try to recognize, okay, what another perspective for this. Another one for this is to think, instead of myself and where I'm supposed to be and all of this, is that other driver. Think about the person in front, just the fact that they're just enjoying their own time. We feel like it's personal. We feel like they're going slow on purpose. They're doing it to me. They know, you know, sometimes they're going 30 and then they're going 20. It's like they're doing it on purpose. They're not. They're just enjoying their own time. Unless you really see them like flip you out the window and, you know, it's personal. They're unaware. They're just, you know, doing what they're doing. They could be stressed out themselves. They could be really tired. They could have just finished a 12-hour shift and they're just like driving along in auto mode and they haven't even noticed what the slowness of their driving. Also, why should somebody go the speed you want them to? Why should everybody do what you want them to do? There's all sorts of these different ways that we can try and break the perspective because we've gotten ourselves lost in this me and mine story. Traffic is a weird one. Cars are a weird one. I was saying to Manu earlier, it's like we have like our normal ego of self and everything, but the moment we get behind a wheel, it's like our ego gets big. It's like it's got a big engine. It's got tires to it. The calmest of people can get so like worked up and just riled up just because they get behind a wheel. So it's weird. It's recognizing that as well. You know, this isn't me. Why am I getting myself so riled up? The more I try and go around this person, I'm just getting myself stressed. I'm not actually, you know, I'm just getting myself more and more worked up. So that's the second problem. That's the looking at the real problem, the mind of anger here. Anger itself only serves to hurt me. Anger has no, the whole point of anger is to focus on what's wrong and either want to hurt someone, you know, or hurt something or shout out. And in that case, me getting sort of like riled up and angry is just hurting me. Like that saying that holding on to anger, holding on to resentment is like holding on to hot coals with the intention to throw them at someone. It's you who gets burned. You burn your own hands. So it's recognizing, okay, this is what anger is doing to me. My day is going to be ruined now. This person in front of me is probably just going to go on with their day. It's all going to be fine. They're going to be fine. But I, you know, when you get yourself riled up, does it last for just 5 minutes and then go? It kind of stays in the system for a while. You've got the adrenaline running. You can kind of be holding on to a bit of anger. You can be a bit shaky and you can be holding on to that for hours. And it didn't need to happen. So some of that is, you know, looking at that fault of anger and trying to bring yourself to a determination to abandon anger, to practice patience instead, to practice acceptance instead. And the third one about the soothing is perhaps a breathing practice. So I've mentioned this a couple of times, but extending the exhale is a really, really great way to stop your system from freaking out from the fight and flight and to engage the rest and digest system, the part of our system that is associated with feelings of safety, of calm. So you breathe in for four and you breathe out for five, and you breathe fully in for that four, out for five. Then you go for five and then six and then seven, and you know, over time. And what you're doing is you're extending your exhale. And just try that anytime and just notice how calm you suddenly feel just after a few of those. Just extend that exhale, and you notice instantly everything just feels a bit calmer. And we can do that anytime. I found that to be very, very helpful. And it's science verified. It's definitely what happens. When you extend the exhale, you engage the parasympathetic nervous system, and it brings about feelings of safety, of calm. So there's something we can do there. So there's sort of like different, you know, pronged attacks to dealing with that situation. Another example that came up was mine and Manu's neighbour. And it was kind of related to what was going on outside there, and that is that we have our neighbour has a kid, and she likes to shout a lot. She likes to sit outside and just shout and bang things and throw rocks over the wall to the cats and to the window, and that's just what she does. And the other day when we were in our office, it was quite a warm day, so we had the window open and we were, you know, doing our work, and I think I was trying to prepare a class, do some writing. And it was just sort of like this, mummy, 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 yeah, over and over and over. And me and Manu just looked at each other and, you know, we could see it just sort of like, yeah, that's a little irritating, isn't it? And we could see it kind of building. And, you know, in that situation, I recognized that in the past, I probably would have just got like really, really angry, really annoyed, and, you know, might slam the window or what, you know, whatever it would have been. But what do I do here? What can I do in this situation, other than go down and strangle her, or, you know, move house, or, you know, go on and like fully remove the situation, or just getting myself upset? And the first thing again and again is to accept. I open my window, I live here, and this is what happens when I open my window and the kid's outside. So I either close my window and I've maybe put on a fan, or, you know, or just deal with the fact that it's a bit warm, or go to another room, or I have the window open and she's there. That's it. There's no other way. My getting myself riled up isn't going to change either of those things. Second, change perspective. In that moment, I'm all caught up on my story, on poor me. I'm having to listen to this, like, annoying. I'm trying to do some work. It's, you know, it's really bothering me. I can't focus. I'm just sort of like getting wrapped up in that. That's only 5 minutes for me. This mummy, 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 mummy goes on 24/7 for my next door neighbor. So I'm only having to deal with it for 5-10 minutes. She's having to deal with it all the time. And you could, in fact, at one point, she went, "What? Please just give me 5 minutes." And you could hear it in her voice, you know, that she was like so fed up and so stressed with this. And the moment I heard that, and the moment I, you know, kind of reflected, this is only 5 minutes for me and this is much worse for her, my feelings of sort of like poor me and getting all myself wound up, it kind of just goes, because you think, you know, the bigger picture here, this is not like a big deal for me. And then even for the child, you know, that's unpleasant, wanting attention from, you know, from your mum all the time and not getting it, and, you know, that's not pleasant for her either. So instead of feeling all poor me and, you know, wanting it to be different and getting upset, it turns into compassion for the mum, understanding, recognition, patience, acceptance. All of that just naturally comes flowing out because you've let go of the wanting it to be different. You've let go of the poor me story. So that sort of sense of self, that ego that was getting upset is gone. And then the same with the noise of people having fun, because people get upset with that as well, especially when meditating. I remember from spending time in a retreat center, I remember people talking about being, you know, in the window, and they could hear people outside talking, and they were like, "Don't you know you're in a retreat center? You should be quiet. Why is there so much noise?" And they would like get themselves all riled up about it. Or I used to teach a class where they did a marching band outside. And it seemed to be the exact same time, and there would be these people doing a marching band up and down. Or, you know, perhaps we're at home and people are having a party next door and there's a ton of noise going on. And if we remember last week, if we were here last week, we talked about rejoicing. We talked about turning that mind from the, you know, what I don't want and that sort of unpleasantness, and instead thinking, that's really nice that they're enjoying something that they love. You know, hearing the kids having fun or hearing somebody have a nice conversation, just instead of feeling all like miserable about me, just think that's really nice that they're having that conversation. That's really nice that they're spending time with people they love, that they're having fun. The same with a party, you know. What's one night of like having to hear boom, boom, boom for me? You know, these guys have probably wanted to have this party for a while. They're enjoying time with their friends. Let them have fun. You know, there's a change of perspective between all on me and what I want and what I, you know, and sort of like that miserly person to the open, let everyone be happy, let everyone be well, let everyone be safe. That's all we want. That's all we, you know, we just want everybody and ourselves to be happy, safe and well, and just let that pour out instead. Because holding on to the anger doesn't do anything, you know? So we have a choice in these situations as to which response we want. The same with work stress. If we have too many tasks, again and again, our first reaction, I accept this is a situation that I'm in. I understand this is what's happening for me right now. Because what is the use in not accepting what's actually happening? There's no point in not accepting it. And I think part of it is like, this isn't verified by science, and I've not seen it in Buddhism, so this is just my opinion, by the way. But I think part of it is like this, is this inner child that, you know, when we were young, if we shouted and screamed enough and got upset enough and stomped our feet enough, mum would sort it out and mum would get rid of it and sort it out for us. And I think part of us as adults, we kind of carry that, and we think, you know, we kind of get ourselves all upset and riled up about something, even just internally, almost as if the universe is just going to go, all right then, go on then, and sort it out for us. Because it doesn't do anything, it just hurts ourselves. So it's the power of acceptance. And acceptance doesn't mean give up. It doesn't mean let people walk all over you. It doesn't mean let bad things happen, not at all. You know, if your car breaks down in the middle of nowhere, it doesn't mean that you just sit in the car and accept and do nothing. And it doesn't mean you just like get out, abandon the car and walk home. It means you accept, okay, the car's broken down, what do I do now? Mechanic, friend, whatever it is. So it's not about just accepting. So if we're in a situation, for example, an abusive situation, accepting doesn't mean allowing that behavior to continue. It doesn't mean we allow problems. It just means we can deal with them without the tension, the frustration, the stress, the wishing it wasn't what it was. So acceptance can be emotional freedom. And there's an analogy I just want to finish with that someone mentioned to me once about acceptance, that it's like playing Tetris but getting upset every time a piece comes down that doesn't fit in perfectly. You know, every time we get angry and stressed at something that happens in life, we're kind of like rejecting that. It's like playing Tetris and just getting all frustrated and stopping the game. But it's not. It's about taking what comes in life, isn't it? It's about what is the next, you know, what's coming next in life, whether it's a challenge or an opportunity or whatever it is. This is what's being presented in my life, and I just have to make the piece fit as best I can. That's what it's about. So, one last point is that we get hung up on these things that we want to change, and we're always focusing on what's next, you know, the stress that's coming soon, the meeting on a Monday that's going to be difficult, that's going to be frustrating, and we sort of like get ourselves all upset about that, that's coming in the future. But living in the present moment, like 99% of our moments of our day are good, they're all right, there's actually nothing wrong. But we're always focusing on what could go wrong, what's going to be next, what do I not want to experience, what, you know. And it'd be far better if we took life in that way, like we do with a piece of music, that we're not just trying to get to the end of it, but we're trying to enjoy it all the way through. We live a bit more in the present moment, accept what's coming, enjoy what's good, not holding on to it and hoping that it doesn't go, and feeling okay with the things that are wrong, knowing that they're impermanent, knowing that they will change, and knowing that we have the strength to get through it. And that's my final point. So we have 4 minutes or so. If anybody wants to share anything on the meditation or on the topic we've discussed, perhaps something that helps them in stressful moments that I haven't mentioned that they think might be of use. Silence.
I think like when you were just saying about the stress, that when we do overcome, like we stress when we got like exams coming up or whatever, but we're going to stress whether that exam, like, 2 weeks before doing it, or whether it's a week before. So there's no point in having a week of stress when you're going to stress about it, like, 2 weeks before. So you may as well just be calm until you get to the, does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, it does, yeah. I think about myself when I used to have these 15-minute meetings every Monday with this one particular client, and I would spend the whole weekend worried about what was going to happen, what they were going to say, are they finally going to fire me, and you know, everything else. But I could have had just a nice Sunday. I could have had a nice Saturday. I could have gone out with my friends. I could have enjoyed my time, but I was so hung up on my future 15 minutes that I ruined a weekend.
Whether you're going to stress all weekend or stress just before, you're
going to, it's going to happen either way.
Just enjoy the time leading up to it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really good point. To let you know, we do the class is carrying on next week. We already have, I think, as you mentioned, some of your friends couldn't get in for tonight, but they've booked for next week. We already have 7 people booked in, and I think only 2 of those are here tonight. So if you do want to book in, let Manu know on your way out, and then you'll be sorted for next week. In terms of the rest of the week, there we have podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, things like that. If you want to listen to some guided meditations, some little reminder talks of some of the stuff we talked about to help you through the week. We also have on Sunday mornings online at 10 a.m. we have a meditation and discussion group. There's people from Gibraltar, Spain and London, all sorts who come along to that. So that's a really nice group to get along to if you can. And apart from that, There is some retreats coming up. So we had a day retreat on Saturday in Lampeter, which went really nice. The venue was, they just went above and beyond. They did like amazing buffet vegan meals, and it was just really nice. And so we booked in for the next 3 months. So it's a day retreat. It happens from 10 a.m. to 4 o'clock. Yasmin, you were there. It was very nice, wasn't it? Yeah. Yeah. So we're doing another 3 of those over the next 3 months. They're on the website if you want to come along to those. It's in Lampeter. Yeah, so it's about an hour and, how long was it? An hour and 40 from here-ish? Yeah, about an hour and 40 from here. And if you get lost. And you can now book a night over straight on our website. So there's 3 bedrooms if anybody wanted to do that. And the weekend retreat, there is 1 bedroom left. The weekend retreat that's in July, there's 1 bedroom left for that one. That's in Oxfordshire. But we've added dates for next year as well. So if you have any questions, feel free to ask either me or Manu about that. And if not, hopefully I shall see you next week. Thank you everyone for coming. Thank you.